Hey, everyone. Welcome again to the Pipeline Podcast. As always, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo of MLBPipeline.com joining myself, Tim McMaster. This week, we're going to talk about Dansby Swanson's debut with the Braves and whether or not the timing is right to have Swanson in Atlanta. We'll also take a look back at the Perfect Game All-American Classic. And also a great summer for the U.S. Collegiate National Team. We'll get an update on who really stood out for that squad as well. But we kick things off with a special guest this week. Nick Senzel joins us, of course, the number two overall pick by the Reds back in the June draft, currently playing for the Dayton Dragons. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be on.
All right, Nick, I guess the first question I have for you is you go from Tennessee, then you're drafted, obviously sign the contract, then the Reds send you to Billings, and then quickly on to Dayton. I mean, it's been kind of a crazy summer for you. How have you kind of stayed calm through it all and kind of dealt with all the change?
Yeah, it's been pretty fast-paced. You know, there hasn't been a lot of time to catch my breath, but you know, after getting drafted, you know, I went to Billings and then, you know, was there for only about a week and a half and then went to Dayton. And I've been here for almost 2 months. So the journey has been exciting so far. But, you know, since you're playing every day, you know, I mean, every single day, it's pretty easy to focus on the baseball aspect of things because, you know, you wake up and you go to the field, and once you're at the field, that's, you know, your mind takes over in the baseball aspect of things. So, you know, it's been really fast paced, and you know, and it's crazy to think that you know, my first stint is almost over. You know, have about 2.5 weeks left, so it's gone by fast, but it's definitely been exciting so far.
Nick, you know, after those 10 games in Billings, you go to full season ball, you know, facing a lot of guys who have been playing for a little bit longer. First, how excited were you to get the chance to move that quickly to full season ball? And it seems that the transition has gone pretty well based on the numbers. What has worked for you in terms of making such a quick adjustment to, you know, not just pro ball, but, you know, playing every single day?
I think that, you know, when I got to Billings, I hadn't played a game in about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, because our at the University of Tennessee we got done pretty quickly, so I was able to work out and hit and stuff before the draft and before I got to Billings, but I wasn't around the game, like the game setting, the 9-inning game. You know, I wasn't facing a live arm. You know, I was hitting with wood, but, you know, I wasn't able to play in a game. So it took me a little bit of time to get in the rhythm of things, to get some timing down, and, you know, to switch over to the wood bat. You know, I struggled early on. I wasn't really getting down at all because, you know, I knew I was still getting used to getting in the rhythm of things. And then, you know, they sent me to Dayton, and I was surprised and shocked. But, you know, that's what they wanted me to do. And I felt like the transition was nice because I came with Chris and I came with another teammate that I knew very well. And I thought that, hitting-wise, at this level, you know, pitchers have a little bit better plan of what they're trying to do, throw more strikes and stuff like that. So, you know, when the pitchers throw more strikes and know what they're going to do, you got a better idea of what you want to do at the plate.
Nick, getting back to you talking about the layoff you had between the early end of your season and then the draft. What was it like waiting for the draft to come? You know, a lot of college guys, you know, you're busy with conference tournaments or maybe the regionals, and you kind of have your mind on other things. With a couple weeks off to think about it, were you trying to monitor what was being said or written about you? Were you working out for teams? How exactly did you fill that 2 weeks between the end of the draft? And did you think, did you have an inkling you were going number two before it happened? When did you find that out?
Honestly, I was looking at you guys' mock drafts.
Well, we both had you going number two, so.
No, it was when the season ended, and it was such a long, it was quite some time before the draft. I just had to try to keep myself busy and keep myself in shape and in baseball shape, because it was about 3 weeks until 2-3 weeks before the draft. So it was just trying to keep myself busy. And I honestly, when you kept having my name go two to the Reds, I was like, well, this is so weird because the Reds haven't talked to me throughout this whole thing. And I was like, well, when Moniak got selected and my agent called me and said, you're going to the Reds, I was pretty grateful and surprised at the same time. So it was a exciting day, but the layover was quite a long time, but it was worth the wait.
Nick, a little bit later on in our podcast, we're going to be talking about Dansby Swanson. He just got called up, and you look at him and Alex Bregman, a couple guys you competed against in the SEC, make it up to the big leagues in their first full year of pro ball. I'm not going to ask you to look ahead too much, but being that you've gone to full season ball, are you kind of hopeful that maybe you can be, if not jump to the big leagues in your first year of pro ball, maybe on a little bit of a faster track as that kind of advanced college hitter that sometimes can move quickly through a minor league system?
Yeah, I mean, you're always hopeful. When you see those guys, Bregman, Swanson, and Benintendi, get there their first full year. As a player and as a college hitter, that makes you hungry to get up there. I feel like there, different organizations have different plans, and whatever their plan is, you have to trust the process. But at the same time, you want to do well. You want to do well at every level you're in, and move up, as fast as you can. But whatever the plan is within your organization is where you're going to follow. But seeing those guys and make it up there is definitely as a player and definitely as a guy that competed against them makes you hungry to make it up there. And what an achievement and what a quick achievement for those guys.
Nick, I wanted to ask you about your approach. I talked to a lot of scouts about you over the course of the spring, and that was something that kept coming up was, that you were a gifted hitter, but guys also marveled at the fact, there was a lot of draft attention focused on you, especially after a big summer in the Cape Cod League. And sometimes guys will fall into what scouts call draftitis and swing for the fences and get away from what they do naturally. And scouts raved about the fact that you didn't do that. And on the Tennessee club, you got pitched around at times. But instead of chasing out the zone, trying to make something happen, if pitchers wouldn't challenge you, you would take your walks. How difficult is it to stay patient and stay true to that approach? Because it seems like that's something that you do very well at.
Yeah, no, I'm starting to experience a little bit here as well. It's just part of the game. At Tennessee, it was helpful that I had two guys around me that, had 50-plus RBIs, too. In my thought process, if they want to pitch around me, well, then I got to get to these other two guys. There's no sense of me trying to get too big or trying to be a hitter that I'm not. I've always thought about it. I feel like I've had the same swing since I've been about 10 years old. And I think the more competition and the more, the throughout the years I've gotten more knowledgeable as a player and, playing in the SEC, playing in the Cape Cod, you face those good arms, every day, so it's helped me with better pitch recognition, better plate discipline, and throughout the season I didn't really ever feel like there was going to be a target on my back. I always just stepped in there like we were going to play baseball, and if they pitched around me, they did, and if they didn't, they didn't. you know, I always knew that I had guys around me that could handle handle it when they threw around me.
All right. Nick Senzel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Pipeline Podcast. Great stuff. Guys, thank him as well. But, Nick, thanks so much. Good luck the rest of the way with Dayton and, of course, as you make your way through the minor leagues.
All right, thanks, guys.
And, guys, some really great answers there from Nick Senzel. You brought up the point that Dansby Swanson was drafted just a year ago, Senzel drafted this year, which gives us a perfect transition into Dansby Swanson. He's now made his Major League debut with the Braves, called up on Wednesday. He went 2-for-4 in that debut, looks solid at the plate. So I'm going to start with a question for both of you of what exactly are we going to see from Dansby Swanson, because I know there's some question marks about the timing of the call-up, but Jim, I'll start with you because you're the guy that compares him to Derek Jeter. What do you expect to see here from Dansby Swanson?
Well, you know, I have to qualify that comparison, even though I do keep throwing it out. I do think he is a similar type of hitter. I'm not saying he's going to have 3,000 hits, but I think he can be a Derek Jeter type offensive performer. And he's probably, I personally think Derek Jeter was overrated as a defender, so all the Yankees fans who liked me for rating their farm system high can hate me now. I think Dansby Swanson can actually be a better defender than Derek Jeter, but I'm not saying he's going to be a better player than Derek Jeter. But throwing the charisma, there are a lot of similarities. Yeah, I mean, this guy was the number one overall pick in the draft for a reason. It's funny, the day after he makes his debut, there's a story on a website where John Heyman talked to Dave Stewart, who thinks he's, done a better job than people think, which was kind of ironic timing. But, this is a guy who's going to play a quality shortstop. It appears the Braves are going to go with him at shortstop and move Ozzie Albies to second base, which is fine. And I think he's going to fit very nicely at the top of their lineup eventually. He's going to hit for average. He's going to have double-digit home run power. He can steal a few bases. And like I said, I mean, anybody who's ever talked to this guy, his charisma is off the charts as well. He's a local product from the Atlanta suburbs. I think he's going to be the face of this Braves franchise in very short order.
Obviously, Jonathan, this is a franchise that wants him to be the starting shortstop on opening day in 2017. How much is that part of this decision to get him a couple extra weeks? I guess you knew you'd see him in September, but now he comes up in mid-August, gets him a little more time in the major leagues to prep for a year from now.
Yeah, I guess that's the main reason to do it now. And they were able to work out that trade to steal Eric Ibar. I wasn't necessarily, I guess it made sense that they would call him in September, but he's not on the 40-man roster. It's not like he, was really knocking on the door loudly in terms of his performance. Under other circumstances, I could have seen them not bringing him up, although for him to get a feel of what it's like. I think that's going to be the biggest positive, aside from whatever numbers he puts up and some electricity that he adds to the lineup and to home games and things of that nature, is just him getting a feel for what it will take for him to be the everyday guy starting next year. And, Jim mentioned his makeup and his charisma. I mean, he's going to take over that infield sooner rather than later. And he's not going to be overwhelmed by the situation. Everyone knows the expectations. He's a former number one pick. It was traded first time that had happened during the off season, everything that goes along with it. He's the local kid. He is not going to be afraid of the situation. He's not going to be a deer caught in the headlights. So I think that even if he doesn't put up big numbers or doesn't hit that much, he's going to play good defense. He'll run the bases. He'll have good on base skills, and he's going to learn a whole heck of a lot and use those lessons to be more prepared for next year. When I think it's going to matter even more for him to sort of step up and start being the guy that the Braves hoped he would be when they traded for him.
There are different ways to look at this. Talking to Mark Bowman, our Braves writer here at MLB.com earlier in the week, and he said, it appears that the Braves marketing department and baseball operations department are in sync, and basically getting to the point that, hey, they'd also love to see some extra fans at the games here over the last 6 weeks of the season. So maybe there's a little of that as well. But on the other side, guys, it does start his clock as well. What about that and the looking ahead to arbitration and free agency and all of that, Jim?
Yeah, I didn't like that. And I'll even question I mean, how many extra fans is Dansby Swanson really going to draw to the ballpark after he's been up for a week? I mean, it's not like this is a guy who's hitting 450-foot homers. They really came out last night. They drew 19,000 fans to see his big league debut. So I don't think it's going to have much effect on attendance. And I would not have started a service clock ticking. This is not promoting Alex Bregman to a team that's in the playoff race and you're trying to fill a hole and upgrade the big league team. The move that would have made the most sense with Dansby Swanson is to call him up 3 or 4 weeks into next season so you delay his free agency a year. Now, you can even look at the fact that he was not tearing up Double-A. I don't think, we talked about his charisma and his makeup. I don't think he's going to have any problems handling the jump to the big leagues. I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed. I think even if he struggled this year, I don't think it's going to stunt his career. I think he's going to be fine. But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And just further touching on the marketing angle, what if Dansby Swanson, he's already off to a better start than Alex Bregman, who started 1-for-32. But what if Dansby Swanson gets off to a slow start and he's 6-for-40? Well, then I almost say that it hurts your marketing, because if I'm a Braves fan who doesn't necessarily know a ton about Dansby Swanson, I might be saying, this is the guy they're touting as the future of the franchise? Oh, why am I going to go to a game? So I don't really see a lot of upside to promoting him now. And I think it's silly to let the opening of a new ballpark next year dictate when you're going to bring guys to the big leagues. I'll be honest, I wouldn't bring Ozzie Albies to the big leagues in September, which seems to be the plan. These guys don't need to be on the opening day roster next year. The Braves are going to be terrible next year, too. Think about what's best for the long-term future of the team. Get these guys some more. Dansby Swanson hasn't played in AAA. Ozzie Albies has played about 2 months in AAA. I'd let these guys, finish this year in AAA and begin next year in AAA and then call them up. I mean, that said, I love them both as prospects, but I just think long-term it doesn't make a lot of sense to bring these guys up now.
Jonathan, any final thoughts on Dansby Swanson?
Yeah, I agree with much of what Jim said in terms of the sort of curious nature, the timing of this. I guess, Swanson and Albies, they played together in spring training. They developed the bond. They were roommates. Then they ended up sort of reuniting in Double-A and were playing together there. If you're going to call Swanson up, you might as well call Albies up in September and let him play second and give them some time together as a double play combination at the big league level. In some ways, Albies has produced more, even though he struggled at first when he got to Triple-A, then started hitting and then got sent back down to play alongside Swanson, which is, I thought, something they should have done from the get-go rather than have them separate. So, Albies is younger. I know he's played pro ball for longer. So, everything Jim said makes a whole lot more sense to me, especially given where the Braves are. Yes, I know everyone is looking towards the future in Atlanta. You talk to Braves fans, they just want to talk about prospects now. I get tweets and messages about their 25 to 30 guys on their top 30. So everyone's paying attention to that probably more than they have. So they're more aware of the Dansby Swansons and the Ozzie Albies, heck, the Rio Ruizes and the Patrick Weigels, down at the bottom of the top 30 than they ever have before. So I think they feel that they're plugging into that excitement and giving fans a glimpse of what that future might look like.
We go from the Braves' number one prospect to a slew of prospects with the Yankees, because the youth movement certainly underway in the Bronx. Aaron Judge, Tyler Austin, Gary Sanchez, all having a big impact on the Major League club. Judge and Austin, historically, they both make their Major League debut together, and they're the first players ever, guys, to homer in their first big league at-bat back-to-back. There's something for you. Gary Sanchez, meanwhile, hit his fifth home run of the season on Wednesday night. So I know we were going to see all these guys after the trade deadline. You don't know how everybody's going to react to being up in the big leagues. Jonathan, I'll start with you. Have these guys been better than advertised so far?
Yeah, I think you have to say that. Starting with Sanchez, I think we all knew that he had power. He's always shown power. But he has swung the bat extremely well since he's been called up. And I think the Yankees have made the right decision to kind of make him the primary catcher. Doesn't mean he's going to catch every single day. You know, he DH'd the other day, obviously. He's not gonna, but to get him as many reps as possible so they can see how that is working. He's improved that part of his game, but that's what needs the most work. And getting him regular at-bats because he's swinging the bat very well at 8 extra base hits of his first 18 hits in 50 at-bats. And then, Judge was red hot right before he got called up, and he just carried it over. So small sample sizes, obviously, but a very encouraging start. And interesting to see the Yankees making these decisions to go with the young guys now when they were still playing halfway decently. I think a few years back they would have said, no, we're going for it and we're trying to make the playoffs, but they realized that this is what they need to do, and they're being treated to at least glimpses early on of what the future Yankees are going to look like.
Yeah, and I guess this is kind of what can happen if you give these guys a chance. They've actually continued to play pretty good baseball, have the Yankees. As far as the rankings go, Judge, the top prospect of the group, number 4 in the Yankee system, Sanchez, number 5. Obviously, this is a Yankee system, Jim, that you have very recently given a lot of props to with the rankings and everything like that. As far as these three guys go, though, how does Austin kind of fit into the mix? Because he's not that top 10 prospect like the other guys are.
No, his career has kind of taken some detours, but it's funny. He was actually going to be on the midseason update until they made the Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller and Carlos Beltran trades, and he just got pushed off. But, I mean, you talk to people in the Yankee system, his bat speed and his pure hitting ability are probably as good as just about anybody's in the system. I mean, he's a better pure hitter than Sanchez or Judge. It's just his problem has been staying healthy. When he was his first full season or first year in full season ball in 2012, he was the Yankees minor league player of the year, and he's just had a hard time staying healthy since then. He's done a better job. This year he's already set a career high in games played, he's just about to set a career high in games played with more than a month and a half to go in big league season. And, and then lo and behold, he stays healthy and he starts hitting the ball consistently again. He's got some power, not like Judge and Sanchez, who are, probably 25 home run types. Austin's probably more of that 15 home run guy. Does he hit for enough power to really be a long-term first baseman? Jury might be out on that a little bit. He might be more of that kind of first base, corner, outfield, useful, utility, platoon type. But he can really hit. And, he's going to give them more than the Yankees have been getting out of Mark Teixeira for most of the season as he gets at bat. Teixeira's just been banged up and showing his age. And I think if Tyler Austin got to play regularly, he'd be the best first baseman for the Yankees right now. Long term, they may go in a different direction, but he can definitely hit.
Obviously, they have Bird as well at some point, so they have some depth as far as that spot in the lineup. Is there another person we're going to see this season as far as the Yankees go, guys, or are these three kind of the big guys that we've seen come up, and that's going to be it?
I'll defer to Jim because it's his list.
Yep. And I was just going to say, I do our Yankees list. I don't think we'll necessarily see. I mean, I just wrote about Jordan Montgomery in our pipeline inbox, and he's got him to AAA and pitched well in 3 starts, but he doesn't have to be on the 40-man roster this year. I don't think we necessarily see him. No, I mean, they have Dietrich Enns is kind of a fascinating guy who will have to be on the 40-man roster, who's got a 1.62 ERA. Maybe we'll see Dietrich Enns coming up and getting a chance. But these are the big guys right now. I mean, the guy who's not on the prospect list anymore, to me, if you're seeing what young guys can do, Chase Headley's having a fairly uninspiring season. Why not call Rob Refsnyder up and let him play every day at third base and see what he can do? He's been up at times and no longer qualifies as a prospect because he's got too many at-bats in the big leagues. But he would be the guy who I think deserves some time to show what he can do.
Yeah, exciting times, and in a weekend where the Yankees paid tribute to the 96 team that was filled with some young players for a generation, it's neat to see these young players joining the team now. The perfect game All-American Classic, guys, was last weekend. I wanted to touch on that. Out in San Diego, Petco Park, the West winning the game in a rout, 13-0. There was some standout performances in the game. One guy we have to talk about, I think, is Hunter Green, the two-way player. I guess he touched 97 on the mound, and he also had an exit velocity of 105 at the plate. That kind of sums him up. Jonathan, long-term, is pitching still where he ends up?
I mean, that's what I'm hearing. There might be some teams that, go differently. And certainly how he has performed the sort of big stages while swinging the bat. He is a very good position player. He has a chance to be an elite-level pitcher. He's got the fastball that you mentioned up into the upper 90s. He's got a really good slider. He throws a changeup. He's athletic. He repeats his delivery well. So I think he's a pitcher. And I think if you were to poll most teams, that's what they would say. But all it takes is one team to decide differently. And some of it might have to do with what he wants to do. I think he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders, and if team says we want to take you at the top of the draft as a pitcher, I don't think he's going to be the kind of kid that says no. But I think at this point, I would like to see him pitch to himself. I think he's athletic enough where he could make that happen.
He was also in the high school home run derby out in San Diego for the All-Star game. So he spent some time out there in Southern California. Jim, Hunter Green was great. There were other great performances. Royce Lewis, I think 2-for-3, a triple, some stolen bases. Who stood out to you in this game other than Green?
Yeah, I was just going to chip in, too. The Green looked good when I saw him at the Under Armour game out here. Went to the finals of the home run derby, hit 98 miles an hour, which matched the highest fastball I've ever seen in the Under Armour game, and hit the ball hard during the game, too. I think Lewis is the clear choice. He's one of the best prospects. I mean, all these guys are top prospects, but Lewis is one of the probably top five prospects for the draft, high school prospects for the draft next year. Hunter Green's number one, but Lewis went 2-for-3, 3 stolen bases, hit a triple. I'm interested to see where he plays, because when I was doing prep work for the Under Armour game, guys didn't really see him as a shortstop, which is where he played in the Under Armour game. They see him as more of a center fielder, but he can definitely hit, and a very good athlete. Guy who interested me when I saw him play in the Under Armour game, and he looked good again out at the Perfect Game, is Nick Allen, who's an undersized shortstop, but he can really play really nice defense. He got the Rawlings Defensive Player of the Year Award before the game, made a nice play in that game. I saw him make nice plays in the Under Armour game. And, for a little guy, I mean, he's not, going to be a big power hitter, but he can handle the bat. He's not just one of these slappy guys who gets the bat knocked out of his hands. I liked him. Nick Allen looked good to me at the Under Armour game and performed well in the Perfect Game contest as well.
To finish things off, guys, was that something, Jonathan?
I was going to just chime in. I love Nick Allen just because he's not the biggest guy in the world. He knows it. But Jim's right. The bat doesn't get knocked out of his hands. He's got plenty of arm for short. He's kind of a fun guy to watch. I don't know how he'll be evaluated as a draft prospect because of his size, but that'll be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, let's finish things up, guys. We go from the prep ranks to the college ranks, still looking ahead to the 2017 draft class. The U.S. Collegiate National Team had a busy summer. They went to Taiwan, Japan, Cuba. They won a series in Cuba. They've never done that before. Overall, a successful summer, and it's more beyond the team game. Obviously, playing for your country is a big deal, and these guys get to do that. But it's also a chance for them to show off the individual skills. Jim, you have a list of the kind of the top performers from the summer on this team on Pipeline.com right now, MLBPipeline.com. And it starts with Jaron Kendall, outfielder from Vanderbilt. And we talked about Dansby Swanson, a number one overall pick out of Vandy. Kendall's got a chance to follow in his footsteps.
Yeah, I think he's going to be in that discussion for the number one overall pick. You compare him to Swanson, he's got better all-around tools. Swanson's a shortstop, Kendall's a center fielder, so there's a difference there. But, tremendous summer, led the team in hits, extra base hits, RBIs, and steals. fast twitch guy. He's got, you know, people like his approach at the plate. He's got deceptive strength. You know, maybe needs to tone down the strikeouts a little bit. Plus runner, easy center fielder, strong arm for the position. Everybody I talked to, a number of cross checkers and scouts for this, he was clear cut the best guy, best prospect on the team, and even more so, far and away the best position prospect on the team.
Some talented pitchers as well. You have Kyle Wright, another Vandy guy, teammate of Kendall, as your number three guy. Jonathan, I know this isn't your list, but you certainly know these players. Alex Fajardo, number two, obviously another Gator coming through after all those pitchers a year ago. Could he be a number one type guy too? We talked about A.J. Puck all last year. He ended up not going one. Could Fajardo be number one?
I think he could be in that mix, sure. And, you know, he even last year, the sophomore, was probably a more complete pitcher. Well, certainly was a more complete pitcher than Puck, and may have been the best pitcher on the staff, you know, which says something given how much talent there was on that pitching staff. And he was, you know, in a lot of ways, Team USA's best pitcher in terms of how he, you know, how he threw. Led Team USA in wins and strikeouts, just like he did, as Jim pointed out, to lead the Gator staff in those categories as well. And we're talking about a guy with a really good three-pitch mix, really good stuff, but he's got deception. He throws strikes. That's what, you know, separated him from Puck. So he has the makings of, you know, that stuff plus the feel for pitching. That's always going to do well in the draft. And coming from that program where he'll be their Friday night starter, you know, I think people are going to be watching him very, very carefully in the spring.
There's some other Gators on this list as well, as you see the same players over and over again. One other guy that we talked about for the site earlier in the week, Jim, was McKay out of Louisville. And he could play both ways, another one of these two-way players. Where is he most likely to end up at the next level? He's a lefty and a first baseman.
Yeah, and it's very much up in the air. You know, it's funny. I came into this thinking he was more of a pitcher, and the more I talked to people, I found guys who liked him as a hitter. I think he could really go either way. I mean, he's won the John Olerud Award as the top two-way player in college in each of his first two seasons. You know, and you look at what he did during the summer. He led the team in hitting on base percentage. Talked to scouts who think he's going to have more power if he were to focus full-time on hitting and get stronger. But then on the mound, he's a very polished left-hander with a good curveball, 88-93 with a fastball, with very good command. You know, it'll be very interesting to see. I don't think there's much of a consensus. If you talk to 30 teams, it would probably be pretty close to even, you know, based on the guys I sampled when I put this list together. And, you know, it's funny. I did not obviously do this on purpose, but when I got done with the list, Tim, I noticed that I had seven SEC guys and three ACC guys. So it was, those leagues obviously dominated Team USA, but, I stuck with the two power conferences for the list in its entirety.
All right, great stuff, guys. That brings us to the end of another great Pipeline podcast. We covered a lot of stuff here. We want to thank Nick Senzel one last time for joining us on the podcast. For Jim Callison, Jonathan Mayo of MLBPipeline.com, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.